On the midway between Minneapolis and St. Paul here in Minnesota, this is Coast to Coast AM. My name is Ian Potter. By the way, I got to say a special hi to some of the people who have been emailing a lot. Gary, who lives in White Bear, which isn't far. It's actually right where the tower is for AM 1500, the station out of which I'm broadcasting this evening. I mean, he's got to be like right underneath the tower. Gary's got to be getting AM 1500 on his toaster where he is. Patrick, who wrote to have a question about Stephen Quayle's research. Also, Joe in Texas with a very interesting story about the Stick Indians I want to get to coming up this hour. And for that matter, Sean, who also is a fan of the work of Stephen Quayle. Just some of the people who have written to ask questions to move this conversation along. And thank you, everybody, for participating. We'll open up the phones later on this hour and get you more directly involved. Stephen Quayle coming up next. Answer all of the questions of all of the topics that have been brought up along the way. We'll get to them all, including, for the first time ever, just what were the giants' sexual practices, their eating habits. What was it that may have helped lead to the way in which they have retreated from popular culture, where they have gone into hiding, some of the things that have happened to them, why there may be fewer of them. We'll talk about this coming up next. It's part of the story of Stephen Quayle's research. You can link up to it through coasttocoastam.com. My name's Ian Punnett. During the top of the hour break, I had run down the hallway and I was looking at some of the photos that I hadn't had a chance to see yet on Stephen Quayle's website, and I got that through coasttocoastam.com, and I was so into it that I forgot I was actually talking to you, and I almost was late coming back from the break of the top of the hour because I was reading some of the articles that you have up there and looking at some of the photos I hadn't seen before, and that is, they're very compelling. And it's one thing to talk about, you know, a story or to have a drawing of something that somebody reported 2,000 years ago. It's a whole other thing to have photos. And there's so many interesting of them, so many interesting photos. Can I ask you, though, just to explain, if you can, for me, the difference between giantism, this condition as you referred to earlier with like Andre the Giant, or the giant that was in the movie Big Fish, who just died within the last week or so. That condition, which usually prevents a long and healthy life for people who are that tall, and the giants of yore or lore.
Well, the difference is, Ian, you pretty much handled it. Again, Andre the Giant's a good example. When you've got a certain condition of the pituitary gland, it can cause your growth hormone to continue to function as opposed to shutting down. But what usually happens, you have an implied weakness, your muscles ultimately give out. Most people that suffer from gigantism in that realm usually die very young. I don't think Andre the Giant was very old when he died. I think he was in his mid-30s or maybe early 40s. But the point is that the giants of history, these guys are all incredibly, incredibly long-lived and long-lived.
Right.
And they're stronger than anything. And also, you know, I once got called on the carpet when someone said, well, there's no study showing that a bigger brain means implied intelligence. And I said, well, you know, I can only tell you this, that if you will even grant to me the idea that mankind didn't just all of a sudden get, become smarter and smarter, he was taught amazing feats of science and technology. And for the reference I use on that is the Book of Enoch, which is one of the oldest non-biblical, when I say it's not included in the canon scripture.
Right, non-canonical, we would say.
Right, non-canonical. But the point is the Book of Enoch has got a fascinating, fascinating history. Now, they have found the Book of Giants in the Dead Sea Scrolls, which I also have on my website, my main Giants website. And people can go and read, because it leads us into the question, what were their sexual habits of the giants? Listen, they went after everything. They didn't stop with women. They didn't stop with their fellow male Giants. They didn't stop with children. They went after the animals. And that's, again, when you understand the mythology of whether it's Egyptian mythology or Greek mythology, when you get into all of everything from the Cyclops to the Satyrs, et cetera, you come into a whole different realm, because they obviously have a different life force. They have a different energy. And by the way, the metabolism of these individuals, I was told by some very bright men who are into this, you know, tracking, and whether people accept this or not, but their body temperature is in the neighborhood of, they run hot because of their metabolism, about 250, 275 degrees. That's Fahrenheit. We're at 98.6. So their appetites are literally ferocious.
They're burning through a lot of calories. But on the photos, you know, on these really cool photos, and again, Stephen, just, you know, congratulations. I really mean it. Wonderful job on cataloging some photos that I have never seen, including some of the biggest dang people that could ever have existed, it seems. And so I ask you, though, why, when we look at those photos, do we think that those are giants as opposed to people who are suffering from giganticism? Why do we think they didn't die a week after that photo was taken, for example?
Well, because in so many of the cases, and when you click on them, you can basically get the background, like Jean Petrusson. I mean, that guy was a circus giant. He's the guy that looks like a Viking in some of the pictures on my website.
Right.
That man was phenomenally strong. He lived to be, you know, very old aged, and I mean, he was huge, okay?
But he was not you're saying he wasn't one of the pituitary giants?
He was not a pituitary entity.
Okay.
The other thing that you asked me a while back, and again, Ian, you know, there's like you know, a million years of history to cover in 2 hours, 3 hours.
Sure.
But here's the deal. The anomalous event that the Bible and ancient history records is that the giants that were talked, they were talking about six fingers, six toes, okay, and double sets of teeth. And that's a fascinating subject, because even when you get, and we'll, I don't want to get into that yet in case you want to go there, but even the Roswell crashed UFO panel was set up for six fingers on two hands, okay? And most people don't even know that. But what you're dealing with is you're dealing with unusual physiological characteristics. Now, medical science says if you have six fingers on one hand, it's called polydactylism, okay?
Right.
That's not unusual. Six fingers, six toes, very unusual. Double sets of teeth, very unusual. Well, invariably, when I do a show on Coast to Coast with George, and I'm sure it'll happen when we're after we're done on this, I'll get calls from all over the country, and people say, my son had six fingers, six toes, double sets of teeth. What does that mean? And I say, I would love to have some of his DNA, a piece of hair. Because, again, what's fascinating is that some people may have one or the other. Unless they have all three sets, they don't have to worry. If they've got all three sets, in other words, a double six fingers, six toes,
right,
and double sets of teeth, then you've got something. I got news for you. The guys in black, meaning the men in black, would be to their house before I would. Because, again, see, here's a question that has to be asked.
No, but couldn't you be polydactyl and have two sets of teeth and just be normally sized?
Well, forgive me, but I have yet to come across anybody that fits that.
Okay.
I have had people call me who have told me that their uncles or their grandfathers were 8 feet tall and they died. That is not in their current lineage, but they had all three of the requirements. And one lady said, does that mean... you know, I'm a giant. I said, well, how tall are you? And she said, I'm 5'10". I said, nope, that doesn't qualify.
Right.
You know, so here's the thing. I can't tell at this point, you know, this is ongoing. I can't tell what it takes to accelerate that. But if you're burning the metabolism, if the giant's body temperature is that high, and, you know, you've got to then understand that this obviously – the cellular structure that's making the energy in the cell has got to be at a phenomenal rate. So that means it's vibrating or it has a higher harmony or a higher frequency. And so, you know, there's stuff there that I just physically don't have the answers for.
Right.
And that's what all the spooks are looking for. And I'm telling you, when I tell you this, the spooks are out there. I think one one of the most important things I've got to draw everyone's attention to is the amulet that's on my website, okay? Did you see the amulet?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. The amulet, and the reason why this is important, this is about 4,000 years old, okay? This was given to a lady that came to physically seek me out. Her mm-hmm. father in Turkey received it, whatever, it's on the website. But if you notice the headdress on this gentleman, it looks, and for those who are listening on the radio that aren't on the internet right now, the guy is at least, based on the size of the individual, he's at least 10 feet tall. But what's interesting is his head is almost conical shaped, and that matches the seven sages in Nimrod Dag. And I don't know if you've been there.
No, yet. I haven't.
Okay. But in essence, there are seven giant thrones in Turkey, and one of the heads on the individual statues that's fallen over looks identical to this gentleman on the amulet. The little guy looks like he's an alien, and again, you know, there's a standard spiel that this was a Commagene empire, which absolutely, I've talked to the archaeologists, some of them that work there, and I said, Steve, this thing is so old, it predates Alexander and Antiochus and everybody.
Well, I wonder, too, whether you've heard of this, and I don't know, because I've tried to get to as many of the links as I could on your website, so... Pardon me if I'm telling you something you already know all about, the Stick Indians.
Right.
Of the Yakimas, the legends of the Stick Indians. This was sent to me by Joe in Texas. He said they were the spirit brothers of the Yakimas. They were a lot like what we think of as Bigfoot or Sasquatches. Their legends in a nutshell is that they lived in the woods like animals without houses. They wore grizzly bear hair clothings. It was said that when they needed a new garment, they would stalk a grizzly about their own size, kill it, and skin it out. Since they didn't use tools, except a long stick that they carried, they would skin the bear with their fingernails. They would then make monk-like hoods with the bear's heads and drape their cloak down to their feet. The bear's arms and legs were tied around the Stick Indians' arms and legs. They were highly feared by the Yakimas. They were treated with great caution and respect. The Stick Indians were also called that because when they were roaming around villages, they would poke a stick through the door of the teepee or a wigwam to see if a woman or a child inside screamed. If they did, the Stick Indians would steal the women for sex slaves and the children for food. And he was just wondering whether we had heard about them, and I hadn't, but they sound a lot like, it sort of follows the characteristics as you've described them, of giants.
Well, right, and one of the things I track is the appearance of cannibalism throughout the world. You know, a lot of people don't understand that when you've got Easter Island, you know, they ate themselves out of existence. That's because everybody was having grandma over for lunch and not letting her go home, okay?
Yikes.
She was lunch. You know, the Easter Islanders had a famous curse. You know, your grandmother's flesh lies rotting in my teeth, you know? Nice greeting, huh?
Duh.
When you deal with Texas and the giants of Texas and the Karnakawas, I mean, that's where we get the statement that being eaten alive. These guys would basically tie someone to a stake and then run up and chop a piece of meat off and, you know, eat it in front of the person. So you've got the giants all through history. I have never found any vegetarian or vegan giants.
Yeah. Now, same thing's true, though. You believe that in the United States, the area around New York would have been where we would call now the New York Giants. Although I guess they're technically in New Jersey, so maybe that doesn't count. But somewhere in New York, that's where there were that's where the greatest evidence is of giants in the United States.
No, the greatest evidence of giants in the United States, believe it or not, is and has been in Florida, because the Carib Indians, from which we get the word Caribbean, were also cannibals, and you know there are people that dispute that. But after doing the last show I did with George on giants, a lady archaeologist called me and told me of the incredible finds that they have found. I'm sure she's listening tonight. And, you know, the fascinating thing about Florida is that Florida seemed to have had a route, a sea route, of a lot of the very large individuals that settled both Latin America and South America when they headed north. And this is something that most people don't understand. The burial mounds in the Pennsylvania-Ohio Valley region, where the serpent mounds are and stuff, even into Missouri, there have been massive. I would say this. I have probably in my files over 1,000 cases of old newspapers talking about 12 to 14-foot giants and talking about, again, the cannibalistic nature of them in the United States. And, you know, for a long time until, Nature Magazine or Discover Magazine came out, a lot of people wouldn't realize that the Anasazi, which are the ancient ones, okay, they fought the idea of cannibalism in the desert Southwest until they found out there were a lot of bones with human teeth marks on them. And, so let me share this. The cannibalistic practices throughout the world, I have spent almost two decades tracking to the giants. That doesn't mean that all cannibals are giants, because you can go into New Guinea and find normal. But the introduction of that practice, again, with the Aztecs, Incas, and Mayas, they not only practiced ritual sacrifice, they practiced, you know, again, a three-course meal out of the different captives they were able to conquer in battle.
All right. And then just to wrap it up to make sure we included it all on there, what about their sexual practices, the giants' sexual practices, might have led to their demise, or at least to being diminished around the globe?
Well, you know, from a standpoint of God, in my opinion, set barriers, and he basically, this is one of the reasons why in the Old Testament there are specific, you know, men are forbidden to lie with beasts, and if a man lied with the beast, both the person or persons who lied with the beast were put to death.
And the beast was too, and I always thought that that was unfair, because I don't think that beast had a vote.
But here's the deal, okay? You've got to understand that when Noah, you know, I mean, listen, the bloodlines, you know that Coast has had different stories with bloodlines, but Noah and his family were preserved because they were perfect in their generations. These giants literally went after everybody and everything. They corrupted every God-ordained barrier that was possible to corrupt. And when you get into the Oannes, O-A-N-N-E-S myth, when you get into Poseidon and you get into Neptune and you get into all this stuff, you'll find that all of the gods of the Greeks and Romans all trace back to a literal and physical giant that assumed godlike qualities because of their power, their intelligence, not only their prowess, but also, look, they dominated with a heavy tooth, literally.
Right. Well, but if we go to the story of Noah, though, you believe that the giants survived the flood.
I believe the giants were destroyed in the flood. I believe that after the flood, there was a secondary time of angelic visitation with women.
Oh, okay.
And see, because that's how you explain Goliath. Goliath, by the way, and his brothers, when David went down to the stone, or the brook Kidron, to get five smooth stones, not only was David going to take care of Goliath, but his brothers. And it specifically states that they were six-fingered, six-toes individuals.
What?
Now, where it's going now, in my opinion, is, again, the attempt is going to be made genetically with mankind cooperating to his own destruction. The idea is to find the DNA to produce transhuman entities and basically say goodbye to mankind. And in my book, Genetic Armageddon, that's why I titled it that, because that's what we're headed to, in my opinion.
But Gilgamesh, the Epic of Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh was a giant in that epic?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If Noah was based on the story of Gilgamesh, and there's some debate about that, but
he wasn't, because Noah was perfect in his generation. It by the very definition, I know what you're going for, and I just want to clarify. There is no indication that Noah was Gilgamesh. Form critics, as you know, form critics and everybody can take apart the Noah's flood, but, you know, it's still argued, was a flood global or universal? Yet explain, you know, seashells on Mount Everest, and I think that kind of blows that it was local.
Okay. But it would explain how giants, without having to have a second wave of angelic visitation, if Noah were a giant or had, you know, a giant genes anywhere, anyway, they could have explained how that continued on if Gilgamesh and Noah were related. But you say they aren't, so we'll just leave that there for now. and say that we'll give all the numbers. And as you heard me say at the beginning of this, I know where it's going to start. I have no idea where it's going to end. And Stephen Quayle is living up to all of his billing from all of you. Your chance to talk to him next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. Stephen Quayle takes his research very seriously. And that's why typically in a Stephen Quayle book, what you'll find are more footnotes than there are pages, which means that by and large, there's a footnote for every page, if not more. And that's good because he makes a lot of connections and uses a lot of material that's in mainstream media to make his points. And we'll get back to your phone calls for him in just a moment as we line them up as we speak. Let me just ask Stephen Quayle, since we didn't have a chance to talk about the second book much, although we referenced it, and I say second book to our discussion tonight, Genetic Armageddon. How do you believe this pursuit for giants will lead to a genetic Armageddon?
Well, first of all, I believe that there's a very malevolent force in the universe, Satan, that is bent on destroying all humanity. And I believe that the words of Jesus, he said, if the days weren't short, there'd be no flesh left alive, no descendants of Adam. I believe in a replacement transhumans, and you know, when you've got the technology that's headed towards basically being able to combine human and animal DNA, which is probably one of the greatest affronts, I believe, in heaven. If you look at the history of even the pre-Adamic civilizations like Lemuria, Mu, Atlantis, when the inhabitants of those areas, whether you believe it or not, when they got into this realm, it's when the destruction came. And I believe, Ian, what it is it's a harbinger of a total destructive phase. Listen, these guys aren't only dealing with DNA of giants. They're also dealing with viruses that have been dormant, have been set in suspended animation, that once they're released, it makes the bird flu and the combination viruses of mouse pox and Ebola pox and everything else seem like little league. Well, it's my contention that mankind is incredibly arrogant, and that in their contempt for God, they have taken the place that science can answer all things. But when you can see only to step three and it's step seven that kills you, I think now mankind has gone beyond the threshold. And in my opinion, we're at about step five. Because when you're dealing with genetic Armageddon, when you're dealing with recombinant DNA, and you're combining animal and human DNA, and you're getting things like the chimeras or chimeras, when you're getting humans, chimpanzees, the point is that there were God-given barriers. Now that man is learning how to fool and mess around with this stuff. And by the way, it's fascinating when you go and read some of the old hieroglyphics. It's almost like some of the pharaohs knew that their chance at a second shot wasn't by obeying the Book of the Dead, but that their gods, little g's, would bring them back in the later time. So it is my contention that genetic Armageddon means the last battle for the real human seed versus a transhuman or hybrid seed. And as we haven't even got to that whole thing, but when you deal with the alien issue, I don't believe that the aliens, the Anunnaki, came here and created us, and I call them the Anunnuki, or Anunnuki, because it seems like they're going an awful long distance to mess around with human females. And the point is that you're dealing now with a subject that what the giants did, the fallen angels were able to accomplish by cohabiting with Earth women based on the Book of Genesis and the Book of Jude, now, quote, the aliens are doing to bring about a race, because you're dealing... Obviously, there's so many different ideas on the aliens, but I deal with that in my book called Aliens and Fallen Angels, The Sexual Corruption of the Human Race. And for those that want to know, this is not a, quote, just flash in the pan for me. I spent a lot of time, and when I talk to scientists, when I talk to double and triple PhD people, there are the ones that will talk on record, they're the ones that will talk off record, and I got to tell you, Ian, the ones that talk off record are the ones that are telling you the truth.
We'll leave it there for now, and we'll come back for everybody's calls. Your chance to engage Stephen Quayle in this ongoing and unpredictable conversation next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. No matter where you are across the country, coast to coast tonight, we just ask that you now be here with us and we'll take your calls. Kurt, west of the Rockies for Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. Kurt?
Hey, how are you?
Terrific, thank you.
I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona.
Glad to have you.
Well, I missed the first hour, but I came on the second hour and I've been listening to you all. And I know that you're a somewhat Bible scholar and what have you, and I've never had a chance on Coast to Coast. I've called many times, but to ask somebody that might know more detail into Ezekiel chapter 1, which deals with, well, I guess they're sort of giant, the wheels in the sky, and the figures that came out of those wheels in the sky, and that they were weird-looking people and things, and actually they were angels of God, and so many people right now, Hollywood, speak of aliens in UFOs to come down and want to eat people and all of that, but in all reality, even thousands of years ago, there were these wheels in the sky, and that they were angels of God to give messages and what have you, but our fake Hollywood stories have made aliens and UFOs in the sky to come down and want to, like, take over the world when actually they were from God.
Okay, well,
that's a good question. I think there's the answer that's obvious. There are good angels and there are bad angels. What you're talking about, sir, in the book of Ezekiel is you're talking about cherubim, and a cherubim is not an angel. You know, it talks about the wheels, you know, a lot of people have likened that to UFOs, but the point that I think in the book of Ezekiel is he's having a vision of more of a heavenly situation, and I think that, you know, when you read that, but I agree with you, first of all, I think that God has been relegated to the back burner, and science fiction and all sorts of monstrosities and imaginary and real entities have displaced God through the medium of television, the motion picture. And I tell people all the time, I say, listen, you know, because it's in the Bible doesn't mean it isn't true. There are people that automatically think, oh, anything that comes to the Bible can't be true. For the record, I have read literally thousands of volumes of stuff that's as old as you can go in history. And I can tell you this, the central theme of good versus evil is prevalent, and when you're dealing with the giants, you're never dealing with a nice guy showing up to have a good time. You're always dealing with very evil and malevolent individuals that are, their total desire is to consume, in this case, eat and destroy humanity.
When did that change then? Because so many of the photos you have then of people who you believe are not suffering from gigantism but are right, giants, aren't reported as cannibals or berserkers.
No, and I want to make it clear. Thanks for bringing that up, Ian. What I'm showing on my website is the individuals that absolutely are so much taller, so much different than, quote, standard, what would you say, medium or normal people. The ones that are the cannibals in history, and I thought I made it clear, but I'll make it double clear, the six-fingered, six-toed,
okay,
double-teeth individuals.
Okay, those... we limit cannibalism to them.
Yes, and by the way, the Solomon Island giants fit into that category.
Do they really?
Yes, sir.
All right, Nathan on the wild card line for Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. Nathan?
How are you doing? Hello. Hi, how are you? My name is Nathan. I'm in Chicago, Illinois. Mr. Quayle, I just wanted to say I love your work, and I'm a big person who studies the Nephilim, the Sons of Anak, Rephaim, and biblical prophecy, and the types of work that you're doing just really just fires me up and just really keeps me wanting to study everything out, because, you know, it talks about how the Rephaim wanted to try and destroy David, and they had six fingers, six toes, and just huge giants. One of my main questions that I wanted to ask you tonight is, what is your take on possibly the future of the Giants, because Jesus does say in Matthew 24 that just as in the days of Noah, so will be at the coming of the Son of Man. And I just wanted to figure out what your take would be on that.
Well, thank you for that question. And that's my contention, that when Jesus made that statement, most people didn't know what the days of Noah were like. But these are the individuals that when God destroyed the earth, these are the individuals that were destroyed in the flood. So I believe that through genetic engineering and all of the search for the genes of the giants, not to mention the living ones that are hidden away in dark Dr. Moreau-like laboratories, I believe that's going to be one of the signs of the end times, and I think we're right there.
Randall, first-time caller line for Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. Randall?
Yes, good morning. I'm calling from Windrock, Arizona.
Glad to have you.
I have a question for Mr. Quayle. I was wondering if he may have heard of the Navajo folklore of a giant that was slain by two twins. Has he ever heard of that folklore?
Well, I've heard of some Indian folklore, and that's one of the things I tracked down, but I have not heard of that specific instance.
Okay, yeah. In this case, the Navajos have a folklore that at one time, way back when man was created, there was giants and monsters that were decimating the human race. And in one of our folklores, the lady, she's called Changing Woman, she gives birth to these two twins. These two twins travel to the father, the son, and they get this weapon, a lightning weapon or whatever it may be. They come back to earth, and they battle this giant. So tonight you were talking about the Nephilim, giants and whatnot you were talking about, which kind of shed light on our folklore that we tell about, you know, the giants that these two twins fought. You know, it just kind of shine light on that for me, because, you know, we tell folklore, and I'm sure there's other Indian tribes that tell folklore of giants.
And let me share this. What you're talking about is interesting, because the Sioux, the Native Americans, have such a rich history in this stuff, and it's like by the way, it's fascinating that you would share that with me. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Sure.
But the Sioux Indians, during the time of Buffalo Bill Cody, brought giant remains into the camp that Buffalo Bill was at, and basically showed him and told him a very similar story of that, okay? And I have that in my book.
Yeah.
But I don't believe it's just, quote, myth. I believe it's real, and I believe that obviously so many Native Americans, especially when you get into the East Coast, and even the California Indians, the Catalina Indians and stuff, they talk openly about battling the giants. And the way the Native Americans would take care of the giants would literally go into caves, and the Native Americans would build fires and end up suffocating them in the caves. And that's why so many times when the giant skeletons show up, they're always in a mining-type situation or in an underground situation.
The Navajos tell those folklores. You know, then again, it could be something like the two may have been given some kind of a laser weapon to fight the Nephilim. You know,
well,
what I mean?
I can tell you this, that there are, again, in South America, there are literally accounts written and chronicled by the conquistadors where they're interviewing the different natives, and they talk about literally lightning bolts from heaven killing some of these guys. So, you know, whether people believe that or not, the lightning bolts, I would say, figure very prominently into the destruction of the giants.
Well, I guess in a way, part of that would just seem to make sense, in that lightning would be attracted to the tallest structure that was around.
So, hey, good point.
I mean, in that way, there would be some scientific evidence to say that giants would be likely candidates for lightning strike.
And you could go on even to take that a little further, because, again, when you're talking about just the simple temperature, body temperature, and the mineralization in the giants, you would also be, basically a walking lightning rod, not
sure.
Just because of the stature, but by the mineralization due to the metabolism. So you bring up two fascinating points.
All right, wild card line, J-Man for Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. J-Man?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Evening.
Well, I was curious about earlier you referenced the giants having the ability to use a nasal frequency of some kind to move objects. you also said that the pharaohs possibly were giants. So I guess, are you maybe hinting at that the pharaohs could have been using these frequencies to build the pyramids? And if so, what is the significance of the shape of the pyramids?
Well, that's a good question. I maintain that it wasn't Hebrew slaves that built the pyramids. And let me share this. Not only was the frequency an issue, but there are literal records of some of these guys being able to lift 10,000 pounds. Now, you've got the stone of the pregnant woman in Baalbek, Lebanon, which is absolutely non-explainable in the natural. Number one, how a stone of that size could be quarried, and number two, how it could be moved. And when you've got the literal multi-thousand-year-old references to what's called harmonic levitation, not to mention if a guy can lift 10,000 pounds with one hand, 10 tons with two, the point is that these are physical records of these individuals being able to lift that. So, again, it is my contention that they were built by the Nephilim, and pyramids, but for the record, are worldwide. They're certainly not you know, only in the Middle East, and they're all over the world.
Right, but just to be clear on J-Man's question, built with their noses?
No, okay. Built with their hands, but they were able to change. When I say built with their noses, I'm telling you that there are recorded cases of harmonic levitation, which the Buddhists to this day in Nepal claim is how they built their temples on the rocks.
Okay.
So the point is, I'm saying, coupled with the strength, and again, you know, you've got stones in some of the different areas around the world, the temples that are so uniquely cut, there's no way to even deal with that in a modern situation or setting.
Let's go to the international line where Bruce is waiting for Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. Bruce?
Oh, hello. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, Ian. Question for Stephen there is, I was listening a few weeks ago and you had Patrick Heron on.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds similar on the business of giants. And I'm just wondering if Stephen has any knowledge of Patrick Heron, or if they've communicated, or if their research resembles their, you know.
Yeah, good question. Number one, I know Patrick Heron. Number two, I've read his book. Number three, the research, you know, when you've got a common thread of truth, he's going to take it. He basically is going from the structures that have been built by these individuals, and I'm going from where it's going to go from here. So Patrick and I are basically of the same agreement that it's the Nephilim that basically have influenced humanity and given us the structures along with all of the technology and the education that is out there in antiquity. I don't believe that we are getting smarter in the, you know, this day and age. I believe our forefathers and these entities, let's call them that, you know, were incredibly intelligent. But I believe, as Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. That which will be has already been.
Well, let me ask you, how come there aren't more articles in the mainstream media or more television coverage about something as sensational as what you are writing about?
Well, I think that's a great question. That's the bottom line. We should have gotten to the bottom line. Just like the last scene in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, there has been an intentional cover-up of trying to keep all of this stuff hidden. You know, the mainstream classic historians teach isolationism. In other words, everybody stayed in their own little locale. There was no spirit of adventure, and the United States was discovered by Leif Erikson, then Columbus. That's hogwash. There are so many indications of Egyptians all over the world, from Australia to the United States. I have on my website an important story that everybody should see. In 1909, the Phoenix Gazette carried the story about Professor Kincaid finding an Egyptian necropolis in the Grand Canyon. Keep in mind that the Grand Canyon had a higher water table in those days. But over and over and over, after doing a show on Coast to Coast, I will get contacted by people who have been in the military, people who have been in science, then they'll say the same thing. We can't say what you're saying, but we want you to know that this, this, and this has been found. So it's kind of like this. You have to control of the not only the subject matter, but you have to make sure that the press is controlled so that the stuff doesn't leak out. And I maintain that the time is over for that. They're not going to be able to contain it that much longer. But I believe it's literally everything that has to do with the subject matter I am talking about tonight is absolutely censored, and the mainstream goes along with it because the mainstream...
Okay, media. And that conversation will continue next hour on Coast to Coast AM.